Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present
Hello and welcome to GIST Radio. We are a casual radio station where we broadcast when we have something to say. GIST stands for Getting Your Shit Together, and we broadcast important interviews and information for artists and creators of all kinds. For more information on GIST, please log into our website at www.gyst-ink.com, where you will find free resources, software, and publications for artists. You can email us and let us know what you would like to hear about at info@gyst-ink.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Ah, yes. This is your favorite GIST jockey, Monica, here in GIST Radio. It's raining out here in California, and I'm on the phone with Diane Olsen-Bush. Thank you so much for your time.
No problem. Thank you.
Yes. I'm going to introduce Diane to our listeners, and then we're going to have a little chat. So let's see here. Diane Olsen-Bush was born in Buffalo, New York. At the age of 18, she emigrated to the UK with a draft dodger, in response to the Vietnam War. After living there for 10 years and working as a documentary photographer, she returned to the United States to attend her ailing parents. Once back in Buffalo, New York, she obtained a master's degree in photography from the State University of New York at Buffalo by documenting local boxing gyms and billiard halls. Excellent. After graduating, she spent 7 years as staff photographer at the local affiliate of the National Public Broadcasting and ABC TV stations. At the same time, she pursued self-imposed artistic projects and established a public arts organization. Throughout her professional career, Diane has continued to exhibit her work in approximately 2 to 5 group shows per year and has been both exhibited and published locally, nationally, and internationally, including shows in Japan, China, Great Britain, Germany, Czechoslovakia, and France. Since her relocation in Las Vegas in 1997, she has been awarded 15 grants and a fellowship from the Nevada Arts Council. In 2009, she became a USA Fellow nominee. Diane continues to teach occasional photographic workshops and donates her time to many local nonprofit arts organizations. Currently, she is creating new embleachments by further bleaching of warheads and other prints to the point of abstraction. Diane hopes to use these reworked abstract prints to bring light to another social problem, the blinding and defacing of women who have acid thrown on their faces by spurned suitors, angry husbands, or the Taliban who try to discourage girls from attending school. Diane is a past president and secretary of the Contemporary Arts Center of Las Vegas, where she lives with her artist husband, Stephen Baskin, and Mookie, the cat. She and her husband collect everything vintage, but has a very soft spot for anything mid-century, mod, and psychedelic. My kind of girl. Thank you again for joining us.
Oh, yeah. Thanks again. This is a great opportunity.
Absolutely. So let's see here. When I was doing my research on you, something obviously came up. You are in a Brett Wesley gallery show. It's called if I remember correctly, The Life and Times. It's like a figurative exhibition, kind of juxtaposing modern Las Vegas and vintage London. So
right.
First I want to know, what does that mean? And then how does your work fit into that context?
Well, the owner of the gallery, Brett Wesley, wanted to have another photographer show with me. He rarely shows does one person or solo shows. I thought it would be fun to juxtapose my work with work by a younger photographer who is doing contemporary work in color. So when you go into the gallery, the original show paired myself with Curtis Walker, who is probably old enough to be my grandson. and he wasn't even born when the pictures I'm showing were taken. So it was a really great juxtaposition. My work was all black and white from the 70s, and his work is contemporary. But his work came down at the end of February, and then the gallery owner kept my work up, and then put some paintings in the gallery with my work. And that's another wonderful juxtaposition because The paintings are color, and you still got the black and white photography that I did in London.
Right. So then what's the new juxtaposition between these paintings and your photography? What are the context of the paintings?
Yeah, the paintings are still figurative, but there's mm-hmm. also a pattern and a kind of a decorative sense. It almost looks like wallpaper, but when you get closer to it, you'll see there's these figures and the representational objects such as log cabins and log splitting and pioneers. It kind of talks about sustainability and the environment and lots of different issues that I think the painter has in mind. So it's just an interesting pairing.
Absolutely, and it kind of sounds like an awareness of time or shifting memories or kind of intriguing insights from two different ways of expressing
yeah,
art.
Precisely, but it's interesting because the black and white photography that I'm showing, the images are so classical, you could almost, I think, put anything with it, and they still work.
So what's it like to be paired with other artists? You kind of alluded a little bit to how long you've been around, but
right.
What's it like to be showing and exhibiting and in some ways competing with other artists for, like, spaces and galleries and, with your classic photography work, and obviously you have other multimedia, multidimensional art practices
right.
going on.
Right.
But what's that like? What's your stance on that? The artist generation you come from and then the ones that are here now?
Okay, well, the interesting thing about this particular body of work is that this work has been around for so long that I've, over time, been able to look back at the work and see which images are really standing up still after 35, 40 years. And the work is so strong because it has... I've chosen images that have withstood the test of time, and because they've gone through that test, they're very strong and they hold up against almost any other images that might be paired with mine. So that works. Sometimes when you do a body of work, you're so enthralled because you just created it. That you think it's fabulous stuff, but after 5 or 10 years, you'll look back and go, "Oh, yeah, that wasn't really didn't really work as well as I thought it was working at the time."
So, what is your interest and connection to photography? Like, why photographs?
Well, I started out drawing and painting,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't challenging to me. It came a little too easy, in terms of making an apple look like an apple or making a chair look like a chair. And when I discovered photography at the age of 17, it was a new challenge because the mechanics and the chemistry and the optics were all so difficult for me to conquer that I just found having to go through that process so much more challenging. And at one point, I was going to pack it all in for ceramics and pottery, because I thought, you're just dealing with mud.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult can that be? And then I found out that people who actually take ceramics and pottery have to understand almost as much, probably more chemistry than I did in photography. And I thought, no, I'm going to stick with what I've already, started and build on the knowledge I do have and stick with photography. And I'm very glad I did.
Absolutely. You make beautiful work, I must say. So, okay, what makes the perfect photograph? What are you looking for when you, capture the image, you go into your dark room or not? What is your process and what makes the perfect photograph where you're like, yes, I'm going to exhibit this?
Well, I think the photographs that succeed are ones that actually connect with the viewer's emotions. One gal came in to the Brett Wesley show, and you know, later on Facebook, had to confess that one of my photographs made her cry. I mean, you know, that's not what I'm trying to do, but it was one of those images that has really stood the test of time, and it was the first time anybody told me that, you know, my photographs made them cry. But okay, that's an emotional response. But at the same time, it needs to be composed, you know, perfectly, and, you know, what I think is perfect.
What do you think is perfect?
Of course, it has to be technically correct.
Hmm? What do you think is perfect?
Yeah, that's very subjective, of course.
Yeah.
This particular photograph that people, a lot of people connected with, the subject matter is in the lower left-hand corner instead of in the center.
Mm-hmm.
So it's balanced by, it's an older couple dancing. And then in the upper right-hand corner is a clock. And
right.
It's not a normally composed, you know, picture, but there's a lot of empty space. And I think people sometimes enjoy that empty space more than a painter or a photographer thinks they're going to. It just works, and you know it works only through your years of experience of looking at great artwork, I think.
Absolutely, and you make other great artwork. So what took you out or added other ways of making art to photography? Like, what else do you do? I know what you do, but let's tell the listeners what else you do and then why you've come to that.
Well, one of my newer techniques is to throw household bleach on a color photograph. And it's something that I think I'm the only one who's really doing that. I mean, other photographers will use bleach, but not in the same manner. And I'm making I'm using it for satirical reasons. A lot of my work is political satire, my newer work. And as you stated in the beginning, the Vietnam War was a huge influence on my life, and so I'm still very tied to politics in my artwork. That often gets me going. For instance, I did an embleachment public art performance recently called Smear and Loathing, and I was trying to address the hate speech that has been bandied around in the media. And, in fact, you know, a month after that, we had the Arizona shooting.
Right.
And that's exactly what I was protesting.
Yep. So tell us about how the installation work has, like, this political viewpoint on it as well. Or does it? I'm talking specifically about toy capsules.
Okay, that's a totally... that's a totally separate thing, but, you know, I just love a challenge. And I saw this challenge presented itself.
Mm-hmm.
It was design a wall for a library, and it was a public art project. And it's basically a competition. Anybody could submit ideas. And my husband and I, as you also mentioned earlier, are crazy collectors. We collect almost everything and anything. My husband really loves to collect toys, and I'm often thinking, you know, we'll say to each other, we'll make this into art someday. And that's an excuse why we're holding on to it and still have it in our garage. And there was this competition to design a wall, and I was just thinking of all the things that we have in the garage, all these toys. And one of the things that we had also were these empty glass blocks filled with toys. And one thing led to another, and I ended up designing a wall of glass blocks filled with toys using the a Mondrian color base, which is basically basic red, basic blue, primary green, primary yellow, those basic primary colors, and used his his composition of squares, and it's up and it's beautiful.
It is absolutely beautiful. And you, I don't know if this is completely separate from, like, the political commentary that you've been making. I see some of the toys in here. I see, like, a black fireman next to a red American flag, next to, like, some other certain toys that, like, me, I'm an African-American woman. I never had access to those kinds of toys. Like, that's very interesting. I feel like there's, like, a political comment there as well.
Yeah, it probably permeates my entire life and things that I do. I mean, I'm often donating work to good causes. And, you know, there was this movement back in the 50s after the Family of Man exhibit showed at the Museum of Modern Art in New York called, well, it wasn't so much a movement, but there was a group of photographers who called themselves concerned photographers, and they were trying to use their artwork to make the world a better place. And I think I've always been in that camp. Of course, now I think the phrase is activist artist. So the language changed, but I think the idea is the same.
Right, right. So what do you value most about being an activist artist?
Well, the nasal thing is, you know, being in this country where one can do satirical work, and as the laws are on the books currently, you can pretty much do or say anything if somebody laughs.
Right.
If somebody laughs, if it's funny, it's satire, and satire is protective.
Right. And what do you value about just being an artist, making work, thinking creatively?
Well, of course, being able to express oneself in a way that's not perhaps considered the easiest or normal way, you know, through writing and through just talking, trying to use visual props to get messages across. I mean, that's a huge challenge. And so, again, I sort of feel that I'm a visual problem solver. And, you know, whether it's a commercial job or a fine art goal that I have, I'm using visual means to solve a particular problem.
And what would you have been if you weren't an artist problem solver? Could you have been an engineer problem solver? A mathematician problem solver?
No, not with math phobia. I'd have probably been a social worker or gone into psychology or, I don't know, anthropology. I'm not sure.
Well, do you have important lessons or experiences that you've had that shifted the way that you feel about yourself in relationship to your artwork? Like, when's the last time you went back over your artist statement?
Well, you know, what happens is I'm actually sort of forced every now and then to create new artist statements for different bodies of work, so that, you know, you're trying to explain what this body of work is trying to do or what that body of work is trying to do. Personal experiences. You know, it's just that kind of, don't give up, because when you first start out, you know, you're going to get a lot of rejection letters, and it can be discouraging. But if you can stay on this planet long enough, it's pretty interesting that the way things do come to you.
Absolutely. And what's the best thing that's come to you? Like, have you ever, like, woken up in the middle of the night? I do often as an artist myself. And I'm like, yes, that's the way to do it. Like, this doesn't have to be a drawing because I'm trained to draw.
Right.
But then, you know, sometimes I get these ideas where I'm like, drawing doesn't make any sense at all.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I've often had those epiphany moments where the light bulb goes off, especially when I was thinking about that wall project, and I literally saw the light bulb. you know, because I'm driving along, you know. And, yeah, waking up, sure. I mean, I think that's how they found out. That's often how our brain works. They say sleep on it. And, in fact, yeah, that's exactly what sleep does. It lets your brain think in more creative ways than you would do normally, perhaps. So, yeah, it's just fun to be out there and trying to figure out, you know, how to do things in a new way. The bleaching thing was another one of those epiphany moments. I was trying to take old prints from previous series because I like to save the planet. I don't like to pollute with more chemistry. And if I can reuse a work, like a painter would paint on top of another painting, I'll do it. And I had these prints, and I wanted to reuse them, and I thought, well, let's see, I wanted to stress them in somehow. So I tried a knife, and I tried tearing them, and I thought, well, should I run over them with my car a few times? And then I remembered how much I liked using bleach and black and white work. I'd never used it with color photography, and that was the epiphany moment, and it worked so well because not only was it, you know, something new and different, but the bleach actually ate away the layers of the emulsion, and what emerged were the colors of fire. And this is just because of the way the emulsion layers work in a color print. So I'm talking about not a digital print, but what's called a C print, a chromogenic print.
Right.
And so the bleach ate away the layers and revealed white, yellow, orange, and red, which are the colors of fire.
Right.
And that led to my whole warhead series, and all I had to do was throw bleach on these prints. Of course, there's no way of controlling what happens when you're throwing chemistry on a print, and so that was the exciting part, because there was no control. You know, normally photography can be quite controlled.
Right. So, especially now, like when we, as artists, we have a lot of control, I feel. This is a good time to have control over, like, what art is becoming, where it's going, how it's changing. But, like, do you have advice for, it's almost graduation time again, for the new emerging artists, the ones that are graduating from grad school or bachelor's degrees, and they want to give a new message, put new work out there? Like, is there going to be new work? Like, what advice do you have?
Okay, I have some great advice. First of all, if you're looking for a job or, you know, you actually have to make a living and pay back those student loans, volunteer. Volunteer, volunteer, volunteer. Get your foot in the door. Everybody loves free labor. But once they get to know you, then they love you, and then they love your work, and you're hired. As far as creating new things, sure. My warheads and the embleachments, it may have taken me, 60 years to make that, have that breakthrough, and maybe not every artist wants to wait that long, but, you know, that was just my circumstances. You've got to just experiment and think out of the box.
Think out of the white cube. Mm-hmm.
And you know, I would look at other media. You know, if you're a photographer, don't look at other photographers. Look at sculptors, or look at performance artists, or look at painters, and perhaps that will trigger a new combination of media or a new approach.
Absolutely. That's great advice. Very nice. I have a silly question for you. Where do you go and how do you find that space where you can think about being an artist? Like, where do your ideas come from? Are you doing mundane objects? Are you, like, cleaning the cat? Like, when do these ideas come to you?
Well, we talked a little bit about that earlier, like, you know, when you first wake up, or I think your brain has to be almost in a relaxed state.
Not under pressure.
You know, like if you're driving and you're just staring at, you know, the blank Nevada, I can't say blank landscape, but, you know, there's a lot of There's a lot of territory here where you don't see anything for miles and miles and miles and miles. So you can kind of tune out. So you've got to somehow put your mind in a relaxed state, and ideas seem to bubble up.
Right. Brilliant, brilliant. So how can we find...
Whatever that is for you, yeah.
I think that makes perfect sense. And how can other artists find you online? You've got a website?
Yeah, www.dianebush.net. You can just Google Diane Bush, you know, you'll see reviews and different examples of, you know, my photography here and there. I was recently a commercial photograph, actually, of an old friend, Milton Rogovin, who just passed away at 101. He was a photographer in Buffalo. A portrait I did of his was recently in the online photography website, or it's actually called Online Photographer, I'm sorry. And then also Teaching Photography. So that's a portrait that I'm very proud of. It's black and white. But, you know, I'm here and there and everywhere.
And what are, like, the best new upcoming projects that you're a part of? What are your next endeavors? What are your plans?
Well, right now I need to wind up another embleachment project of the Smear and Loathing. I need to finish that up. I've got an exhibit coming up in November at the Marjorie Barrick Museum in Las Vegas at UNLV. That's going to be an embleachment exhibit. Mm. And I'm working right now on a fellowship application, and I'm also working on getting my British photography shown over at the UK. The London Museum sounds interested.
Oh, well, here's another question. How does one get into an exhibit or gallery they have never shown in before? What is your process?
It ain't easy.
I bet.
You know, it depends on where you are with your career. Right now, I'm only interested in looking at galleries in the major hubs because my resume, you know, at this age is already, you know, too full. But if you're just starting out, you know, go to deadlines.com and look at opportunities. A lot of the universities have galleries. They're looking for artwork. But, you know, you have to think about the cost of printing and shipping. Mm-hmm. So, you know, back in England, we used to have exhibits in laundromats because you had a captive audience.
Right.
So, you know, I also had a show at hospitals where, again, you have a captive audience and people who are really appreciative of seeing something to get their minds off their problems. So it just depends. I wouldn't go into it for the money, though.
I know.
I mean, Cindy Sherman is a millionaire,
mm-hmm.
And that's wonderful. I love her work, and I'm glad she's successful. But, you know, Annie Leibovitz also did well, but got screwed by the...
Yep.
The financier, so you
yep.
never know.
Well, that's great advice. Diane, thank you so much for your time, for talking to our GIST listeners.
Well, I really appreciate this opportunity to reach out there to everybody.
Absolutely. And let's see, dianebush.com, and we're going to post this all over the place. Oh, .net, D-A-N-E-T.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yep.
Wonderful. Okay, well, I'll be in touch with you, Diane. I'll send you the link so we can put this everywhere. And have a great afternoon.
You.
Yes.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Take care. All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye. And that is the best interview, one of the best that I've had. She's such a wonderful woman. And, yeah, we kind of alluded to, like, how long she's been around. A very long time. That is a seasoned artist who knows what she wants and know what she's going after. So everyone can take a little tip or two from there. Okay, let's see. GIST Radio, if you have any suggestions, recipes, I love to cook, concerns, comments, whatever, GIST Radio, that's G-Y-S-T,
gistradio@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter. Just type in Gist Radio, G-Y-S-T Radio. What else? We have a Facebook page. You can go to Facebook. I don't know. What is this Facebook thing? I don't even know if anyone's on there anymore. Find us, Gist Radio. We also have a mother company. It's Gist Inc., where we have all the free artist resources and books and publications that artists need, like how to write an artist statement. How do I get into grad school? Do I even need to go to grad school? What kind of job do you want? I don't want to work in a gallery because they book people 3 years in advance and I don't have 3 years to wait on this idea that I'm working on. Any kind of answer to those kinds of questions is gyst-ink.com. All right, let's listen to some theme song. This is Monica, your favorite disc jockey. Talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present Gist.
Hello and welcome to Gist Radio. We are a casual radio station where we broadcast when we have something to say. Gist stands for Getting the Shit Together, and we broadcast important interviews and information for artists and creatives of all kinds. For more information on Gist, please log into our website at www.gyst-ink.com, where you will find free resources, software, and publications for artists. You can email us and let us know what you would like to hear about at info@gyst-ink.com. Thanks for tuning in.
Okay, at the end of every show, I've decided that we're going to do an artist shout-out. Now, these are people who follow us on Twitter. These are people on our Facebook page. These are just artists that I, like, find or get referred to me that are interesting and just cool. So the artist shout-out of the week is going to be a Twitter follower. Her name is Linda Leonard from Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, Linda. Checked into your work. It's great. She's, like, perfect. She's a nana to four. She's got four grandkids. Her photograph on her Twitter is super cute. Very, very artsy, right? She does hybridized artist things. So the drawing and painting and jewelry making, recycled works. We love the recycling. Great job, Linda Leonard. So that's our artist shout out. All right, Gisters and Gist listeners, check us out. I'm Monica. Talk to you later.